I could go on and on about his zombie takeout. His bone, his knob, his bishop, wang, thang, rod, hot rod, humpmobile, Oscar, dong, dagger, banana, cucumber, salami, sausage, kielbasa, schlong, dink, tool, Big Ben, Mr. Happy, Peter Pecker, pee-pee, wee-wee, wiener, pisser, pistol, piston joint, hose, horn, middle leg, third leg, meat, stick, joystick, dipstick, one-eyed wonder, junior, little head, little guy, rumple foreskin, tootsie roll, love muscle, skin flute, roto-rooter, snake, hammer, rammer, spammer, bazooka, rubber, chubby, sticky, stubby, schmeck, schmuck, schvanti, yin-yang, yang.
Hello and welcome to Zombie Takeout, the B-movie and cult movie show. I'm John.
And I'm Scotto.
And fortunately, there were some issues with the camera switching there for a minute, because so I was able to maintain my composure, or regain my composure after that intro. Yeah, we record the intro straight before I counted in and say, welcome to Zombie Takeout. Yeah. So, yeah, I took me a few tries. Fortunately, there were some camera issues. Anyway, before we get to this week's movie, we've got some feedback. This is from Bodo on Twitter. He said, I think I heard you write that you guys were asking about video games that were better than the movie. Doom, Pixels, all the games were better, even Qbert. And I would argue Tron was better than the movie as well. Yeah, I should have been more specific. I meant if the game was adapted from the movie, which is the case with Tron, and I would agree with you there. Yeah, Doom was a game first and definitely better than the movie. I haven't seen Pixels, but from what I know about it, the games were probably better. I can't think of any other cases where the game, well, GoldenEye.
You're talking about making a movie based off a video game that existed.
Yeah, in that case, the game is most likely going to be better. Whatever came first is going to be better.
Yeah.
And I have seen Dune, and I've played Doom, and the game is far better.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, Boda's got a point with Tron. I didn't think of that one.
Well, Tron wasn't a game.
Well, no, it was a movie first, and then
yeah,
the game
Tron's
came from
a movie
the movie
first, and they made a game based on the movie,
and the game is better.
Really,
I think so, and Beto pointed that out. Yeah, I would agree with that.
I don't know if I remember the game Tron.
Oh yeah, it was mostly light cycles. I think that's the big part that they.
Oh right, it was just the light cycle scene.
Yeah, but I would say Warcraft is kind of on par, and that's as you know, somebody who's played WoW for 11 years. The game and the movie are about on par. I can't think of any other cases. It's usually the case. Obviously, the book is always better than the movie. You know, whatever the source material is, it's probably better. Anyway, on to some news. And this is a trailer announcement for a movie or for a trailer that you haven't seen yet. Because I wanted to do this while we were recording. It's a ridiculous B movie that we're going to have to review.
I've got this bit.ly link here, so I don't even know what it is.
Oh, yeah, it's in the chat. So,
yeah. All right, so I'm going to click on it.
Yes, and I'll shut up so the camera's on you.
I'm just starting it now. Wait. So this couple is beating up people in their underwear?
Notice the title.
The Velocipaster? No. No, they're not doing this.
And while you're doing that, I'll start reading. Go ahead.
I have a brother-in-law that is a pastor.
Uh-huh.
I think I have to see this with him.
The Velocipaster trailer, a priest turns into a dinosaur and fights ninjas. This is from Slash Film.
Wait, he turns into a dinosaur?
And fights ninjas. Game of Thrones is poised to kill off several major characters during this weekend's battle episode. This was, you know, last week. And it's extremely unlikely that all of the characters of Avengers Endgame will come out unscathed. This is a fraught time for pop culture heroes. but when the dust settles, a new hero will arise. Slash Film readers, allow me to introduce you to the Velocipaster, a ninja fighting priest who has the ability to turn into a dinosaur. And here,
amazing.
And here's the official synopsis. After a devastating family tragedy, a priest travels to China to find deeper spirituality, but instead is endowed with an ancient ability that allows him to turn into a dinosaur.
Of course.
At first, he is horrified by his newfound superpower, but a local prostitute convinces him to use his newfound gift to fight evil and, of course, ninjas. The Velocipaster will have a special midnight screening and Q&A during the Texas Frightmare weekend on May 3rd, 2019. This coming weekend, as we're recording that, for this coming Friday, if anybody's going to that, who's watching, enjoy it. Let us know if you go.
Yeah.
How it is. And the film arrives on home video in August 2019. So in a few months, we will finally be able to see it. We will
be reviewed as soon as we can get through it.
Yes. And of course, that brings us to this week's movie, which is from 1995, Four Rooms. This kicks off a Robert Rodriguez two-parter and concludes an unintentional Antonio Banderas two-parter. I don't think we meant to put X versus Sever and this one next to each other with the realization that he's in both of them.
I wasn't even really... Yeah, sure. Why we were doing this right now anyway.
We for some reason decided to put them next to each other. I know that because in a couple of weeks, when we hit 10 years of Zombie Takeout, we've got the Rollerball two-parter.
Right, right.
And that was planned. So these had to be planned too. I don't think we meant to put two Antonio Banderas movies together. I know we intended to put two Rodriguez movies together. Anyway, of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Mr. Bean. There's a reason he rarely speaks.
And also brought to you by Hotel Monsignor. Come for the Cristal, stay for the... What's that smell?
You really don't want to know.
All right, so we begin with the young bellhop getting the torch passed to him from the old bellhop. It's New Year's Eve. He gives him a pat on the back and gets out of there. I guess this is his first night, which is a really weird night to start someone on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, that seems like torture testing.
Yeah, yeah. It brings us into the first part, which is the honeymoon suite, the missing ingredient, and he's very animated here, but he he finds himself in the middle of a coven of witches, not an oven but a coven, and
that joke was in the movie.
Yeah. They need a secret ingredient to complete their spell because, well, somebody swallowed it instead of holding on to it. He also does this Ed Grimley thing. he doesn't do this in the other parts.
He's somewhere between Grimley, Stan Laurel, and Mr. Bean. Granted, Stan Laurel was the original of all of that. But.
Like, he's really jumpy here and like electric here for some reason.
He calms down as the movie goes on.
Right, thankfully. Which is very strange. It doesn't make much sense in that way. You would think, you know, it would be the reverse, that he would be driven insane and just, you know.
true.
But instead, here he's just completely wired. And of course, get the ingredient. That brings us to room 404, part two. It's the wrong man. He finds himself in the middle of this weird lover's quarrel between a husband and wife, where the wife is tied to a chair and the husband's waving a gun, and he's going through, I don't know, a heart attack, an OD, or something.
Kind of maybe coming out.
kind of, yes, maybe coming out. Although you never know what kind of relationship they really had in the first place.
True.
Because, I mean, this was obviously set up because the way that ends is just another dude comes in and the same thing happens all over again. That leads us to part three, room 309, the misbehaviors. They don't exactly say what Antonio Banderas does. Is he a gangster of some sort?
The owner of the hotel is very afraid of him. Actually, no, Ted the bellhop is very afraid of him.
Well, right. They are preening their kids, and in the middle of getting ready to go out for the holiday, they decide, let's ditch the kids. And they pay off the bellhop to look after them. And, that one, hilarity ensues because that one's like a, just.
That saved the movie. It's a good thing this is a Rodriguez two-parter because Rodriguez's part saved the movie for me.
And then that leads us to the last part, the penthouse, the man from Hollywood, where they actually bring the Jerry Lewis reference up, of course, for the bellhop, which I guess is what, you know, Tarantino's inspiration was to do this in the first place. But, I mean, Roth is just all over the place. There's this great buildup for a very, very anticlimactic ending. But it is funny how it builds up and then is suddenly the resolution happens.
It doesn't really have a climax.
Lightning quickly and hilarity ensues. Mm-hmm.
And this was co-written and co-directed by Allison Anders, Alexander Rockwell, Robert Rodriguez, and Quentin Tarantino, each directing a different room. Anders did The Honeymoon Suite. Rockwell did For Rough War, The Guy with the Gun. Rodriguez did Room 309, The Kids. Tarantino did The Penthouse, of course, at the end. The original idea came from Rockwell, and it's loosely based on the adult short fiction writers of Roald Dahl. Yes, that Roald Dahl, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Huh.
Especially Man from the South, which is the basis for the last one, Penthouse. And The Man from Hollywood, directed by Tarantino. And I loved the old guy at the beginning, the old bellhop. That was a great way to start it. Although his list of things to avoid really telegraphed the rest of the movie.
Right. It did.
And then we get an animated credit sequence in 95.
Right. A very old school, like, you know, 60s, 70s sort of intro, which, you know, Tarantino, of course, being the film nerd that he is, that had to have been intentional.
Yeah, I don't know who directed all of the interstitial stuff and, you know, the intros and titles and all of that.
Well, it's a Tarantino produced film, so I think he did do the connective tissue of the movie.
I also completely forgot about Combustible Edison, who do the theme song. I was kind of into them back in the day. Look them up again. Although I, for a long time, thought that Roth was better at comedy. This made me reconsider that.
I liked Roth in this. I mean, like I said, though, I think I don't know what was going on with him and why he was so different in that first scene from the other three.
Well, in the first scene, he was trying to hook up with one of the witches.
Was he trying to actually hook up with them?
Well, he was trying. It was a room of beautiful women. He was trying to impress them, trying to be suave and smooth.
Okay.
Yeah, he was at his most Mr. Bean in that scene. And to be honest, as much as I love Rowan Atkinson, I've never been a big Mr. Bean fan.
Really?
He's just always annoyed me. So, you know, I think that's why it kind of put me off at the very beginning. You know, one of my perspective titles was It Gets Better.
I mean, I think, I really think he was coked up on that.
I'm not going to speculate about that.
I mean, it really looked like he was just like, I don't know, maybe if there was a missing scene of him snorting up or the character snorting up and he was acting that way, I don't know, but...
And Madonna was also in that first scene, which was a bad sign, you know, when she walked onto the set.
Could be the best thing she ever has ever done, actually, if you think about it.
Possibly, yeah, in terms of movies, yeah. Now, I think the problem with that opening scene There's no straight person.
That's true.
It's all buffoons. And because I was kind of hopeful seeing how over the top all the witches were, that Roth would be the straight man and his reactions Roth would make it all worth it. Roth was
supposed to be the straight man reacting to it, but he doesn't really react.
No. Although there is a nice touch when the ritual goes wrong, Valeria Galeno's character turns around and breathes fire for a split second. It was just a blinking and missing kind of moment, but I did get a kick out of that.
Yeah.
Now, I have to wonder where Alicia Witt's character, Kiva, goes, because they all leave Eva alone with them so they can have sex. She doesn't leave with them, but she comes back with them. At this point, I was so annoyed with the movie. I was looking for continuity. I was like that. There was a nice nod to Betty Page in that scene, though.
Oh, yeah.
They show her, the witch she's going to sleep with, shows him a picture of the goddess they're trying to raise. And it's, you know, one of those classic Betty Page BDSM photos.
Right.
But it comes to life and it's two other people, of course, in, you know, as Betty Page and the other model. And I do like that each vignette, each room was handled individually instead of interweaving them.
I wish there was a bit more crossover. Than there was. I mean, you only had the one like phone call.
Yeah. They're all handled kind of discreetly, except for obviously the Jennifer Beals is in two of them as the same character. But you know, it's not like a Cloud Atlas situation where you hit, you know, bits and pieces of each of them. They just you get it over with, you move on.
I would have liked a little bit of more interaction. Not much, but just something like, you know, the cleanup crew or the cops coming, mm-hmm. leaving for one thing. Or,
yeah,
you know,
that would be good. That little hint would be nice. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, the phone call was nice, though. And, like, he never does make it up to the ice, you know, for that other party at 5:04.
Well, because they said 4:04.
Yeah.
So if he had gone to 5:04, he would have dropped off the ice left, and that would have been that.
Well, right, but then he runs into that guy again, and of course there is only one reason why a guy would have his head sticking over out of a
window. Like, yes, there was a little too much vomit in this movie for my taste. He accidentally goes to room 404 and confronts and runs into a guy with a gun and a woman tied to a chair. At this point, I figured, okay, his comedic thing that he's doing would be a nice addition to a really dramatic scene. But it doesn't stay dramatic for long.
Right. Although I really do love his "Don't Call Me Theodore" speech.
Yeah, the rant was nice.
This, you know.
Although at the beginning of that scene, suddenly he can't speak. He was constantly talking with the witches, and now he's finally shutting up and going full Mr. Bean.
Yeah, he's...
When he could simply explain, "You have the wrong guy." This movie is also just very 90s. There's just something that screams 90s about this movie. And when I saw it back in the day, I liked it a lot more than I do now. I don't know why. It didn't age well for me.
Of course, he makes a Fred Sanford reference when he's having a heart attack.
Mm. Oh, yeah. And then it kind of became this bonding thing between him and Siegfried, the guy with the gun, because neither of them likes their given name.
Oh, right. You know what? I didn't think of that. That is why Siegfried, you know,
kind of bonds with him and connects to him, and then kind of maybe comes out. And then, you know, Ted steps away because Siegfried has a heart attack, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
And he sends him into the bathroom to find his nitro pills. And Ted decides he's going to escape out the window from the hotel that he works at. That's on the right. Fourth floor.
That was funny where they have like the arrow. This is where he is.
And I did like the cross section of the wall where you can see him, you know, sticking through. That was nice. But at that point, he was just kind of, then him and the movie were just kind of getting steadily more and more annoying to me. And then room 309 happens. The kids. And I didn't expect to like that part because kids.
It's like it's kind of a Tom and Jerry plot.
It is.
Only with booze and hookers and
So this couple are, you know, for some reason, like you said, preening their kids, even though they're going to leave their kids home. And
they didn't plan on leaving their kids. They just decided.
At the last minute. Okay.
You want to have fun tonight? Okay. Let's ditch the kids.
And so they pay Ted $500 to watch the kids. And then it just gets beautifully chaotic.
Yeah.
They tell the kids, you know, call him if you need anything, and he leaves. And the kid, the son is turning on the porn channel, and the girl's going straight for the champagne, and it just gets insanely chaotic. Shout out to Lana McKinnisack, I think it is, who played the girl. She's still acting.
Good.
She killed it.
She was awesome. I mean, just the whole clusterfuck at the end. Really, this should have been the last. The last vignette of the movie, but of course, the explanation of the ending.
At one point, the kids find a hypodermic in with the Bible,
right?
And, they decide to draw a bullseye on the painting in the room and play darts with it. Ted comes back. The girl's got the booze in her hand. The boy is smoking, or maybe that's flipped.
No, I think the boy was smoking. For some reason, the boy liked to smoke.
And the room is on fire. Well, no, when Ted comes back, it's not on fire. Ted comes back because they found a dead hooker in the mattress. Because there's this gag about how there's this horrible smell, and both of the kids think it's the other's feet. And the girl realizes it's not their feet, and she pushes the mattress aside and finds this dead hooker and calls Ted. And so he comes in and something happens, and suddenly the room gets lit on fire.
Gets stabbed with the hypodermic. The cigarette comes out over into
the booze. Right, booze, that's how it happens. And the parents walk into a room on fire with their son smoking and their daughter drinking and a dead hooker in their mattress.
And he's holding on to the dead hooker's leg because he's trying to like move. And he's got a hypodermic in his leg. And
it's just the best kind of French farce. And it almost makes the movie recommendable. Tarantino could have put it over the top. Although there's also this annoying recap scene with Marissa Tomei and Kathy Griffin that was not necessary. It really just sums up the rest of the movie.
It's what keeps him from leaving altogether.
Because Kathy Griffin tells him they've got a really high-paying customer in the next room, some kind of movie star. And she goes very mid-Atlantic for some reason.
What?
That old-school like mid-Atlantic accent.
Oh, yeah, she does. She does very Girl Friday, sort of.
I don't get why. But like I said, Tarantino could have put it on the rec list. It didn't quite work for me. His ridiculous style of acting definitely fit the movie, though. Because Tarantino always kind of overacts.
And then you got an uncredited Bruce Willis.
Who was uncredited because he violated SAG rules by doing it for free. And the negotiation was, if he's not credited, SAG won't sue him.
Wow.
SAG was going to sue him for doing a movie for a friend for free. Ted was originally going to be played by by Steve Buscemi, who would have been much better in the role.
Maybe. I mean, I do like Tim Roth a lot.
Well, I love Tim Roth, but not in this role. It gets to this last room, and you've got some movie star and his entourage.
They're just a bunch of douches just hanging out in this hotel room talking about Cristal and how important it is Cristal.
Cristal, because it's the 90s.
And just bunch of douches, and they build up this whole stupid Alfred Hitchcock thing. Well, I mean, the Alfred Hitchcock thing is cool. Like actual
episode. Tarantino being a film nerd. Right. Which is 90% of his dialogue is Tarantino just being a film nerd.
But then, of course, it's just, you know, it's these guys thinking they could live this stupid Alfred Hitchcock thing that makes it stupid.
I don't remember the movie they're talking about, but it's a scene where the one guy bets this other guy his car
that he can remember. From the show, the Alfred Hitchcock Presents show.
Right, it's from a show.
It was even done, I think, with John Huston.
Okay.
They're the one they're talking about is the original, though. Yeah, Peter York, Peter and Laurie, Steve McQueen. Peter Lorre and Steve McQueen. Mm-hmm. I think they remade it in the 80s. Remember, the Alfred Hitchcock Hour came back with John Huston. Huh. And I can't remember the other actor, right. But
but the bet is that one of them can light their Zippo 10 times in a row.
Yeah.
I smoked for 20 years. I've had a couple of Zippos. Zippos light every time, unless you're in insane wind. So that's not much of a bet. So anyway, he can light his Zippo 10 times. If he can't, he loses a finger. If he can, he gets the guy's car.
It's like Monty Python and the whole, you know, what's your favorite color? You know,
yeah.
Like it's like the buildup to that. Mm-hmm. And he answers, of course, the color incorrectly. Somehow. Yeah, yeah. Blue, right. No, yellow.
Yeah.
But yeah, the entire scene leads up to this ridiculously short, you know, outcome. And,
He doesn't manage to light it 10 times. No, he does. They don't even try.
He fails on the first attempt.
He does fail on the first attempt. Okay.
Yes. That's the funny part. This whole buildup is like, all right, we're going to do.
I thought Ted just went early. I thought Ted just had a false start.
No.
He didn't make it the first time.
He didn't make it the first fucking time. Picks up the money. I'm out of here. Out. My favorite part, of course, is that while they're panicking, of course, and gather around, he takes the elevator, even though they're going to need to, like, of course, go to the emergency room. Like, fuck these guys.
And I do like that the camera stayed in the room with all the chaos.
Yes.
After Ted walked out. Although I do have to wonder why Norman, the guy who got lost a finger, sounded like Siegfried at the end. When he's screaming about getting his finger cut off, his voice completely changed.
You think they had like a dub or something?
I think the guy who played Siegfried may have dubbed him there for some reason. Maybe there was an issue with the recording and somebody else had to dub it. Maybe. Because he did not sound like the actor who was in the rest of the scene after that point.
Oh, it's Peter Calderon, I think.
Okay. And I don't remember who played Norman. I've seen him in a few things.
That was Norman, Peter Calderon.
Oh, okay. It was Siegfried. Okay.
No, Siegfried.
That was Norman. I don't remember who played Siegfried. The guy who played Siegfried, I always confuse with Chaz Palminteri.
Oh, yeah, you're right. That guy did look a lot like Chaz Palminteri. Did you know that the stoner was Marissa Tomei?
Yeah, I know.
Like, I did not get that because it didn't really look like her at all.
I think I had already looked at IMDb, so I knew she was in it.
Well, it's kind of like I saw her name somewhere, but like, where was she? Like, oh.
Oh, also, Madonna won a Razzie for this. Well-deserved.
I didn't think it was that. I mean, it wasn't that much of a role either way.
True.
They're so much worse than this.
Oh, yeah. But should we bother with sequels and remakes?
There's no sequel. I can't imagine a sequel because he's not going to get back into the hotel business.
No. And nobody should remake it.
And the bellhop thing is done, you know?
Yeah,
like, there's hotels that don't even have bellhops anymore. You know, it's done.
Yeah. On to Brains.
On to Brains.
The first half was dreadful. Loved the kids. Tarantino got it close. I'm going to go 3.5. I would recommend it, but only if you start at 41 minutes in.
I enjoyed this all the way through, actually. So I'm going to go 4.
All right.
I think it needed a little more consistency in the character. But, you know, I think it's worth it just for Tim Roth alone, honestly.
And what have we learned?
Well, I mean, if somebody offers you $100 for a minute of your time, you got to hear them out.
And I learned that the less a man makes declarative statements, the less apt he is to look foolish in retrospect. Probably the best thing Tarantino ever wrote. And I also learned that I need to see The Bellboy. Apparently, Jerry Lewis has a completely silent performance in it. I want to see that.
Oh, yeah.
And that's it for Four Rooms. Until next time, we'll be continuing the Rodriguez two-parter with El Mariachi, the prequel to Desperado, which everybody, you know, is way more well known. Until then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are. One, two, three. Hello and welcome to Zombie Takeout, the B-movie. One, two, three. Hello and one, two, three. Hello and one, two, three.